Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Question Mark with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Craig's Plus.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
All right, here we go. This one comes in on our RamosLaw.com text line at 303-713-1043. It's the same way. You can also hit us up with your Is It Just Me? Hot takes, hot sports opinions that you want to get off your chest heading off into the weekend. And Jason Greeley asked, Mark, after the Eagles' issue with the White House, the whole kneeling rule, and fans starting to boycott the league, do you see this being the lowest-rated NFL season ever?
No.
Why?
Because I think, one, people pine for football. I think, two, the whole kneeling thing had essentially dissipated by season's end, and the ratings were off the, you know, off the hook for the playoffs. So I think with the new rule they instituted, I just don't think there's going to be a lot of controversy. Now, the ratings may stay down just because ratings across the board are down. And the football hasn't been as good, especially early in the season, it hasn't been as good. But, like, do I think everybody's going to continue to boycott the NFL? I think people will tune in. If you don't see a bunch of guys kneeling, you know, if that's something that's keeping you away, if you can't get over the you know, the false narrative of anti American or anti-patriotic or anti-military, which is not at all what it is about. But if you can't get over that, if you tune in and nobody's kneeling down, are you just going to kind of go, oh, okay, we're good. NFL's back on. I would just, you know, that's, I guess, what I would ask you. I don't think it's going to be a historic low.
No. Look, the NFL, the NBA ratings, the much-anticipated Golden State, Cleveland, here we go again. Game 3.
It's a great game, by the way.
Yep. Game 3 was down by 5% compared to last year. Drew a 12.7 rating.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
12.7. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
The,
it's huge for the NBA, 12.7.
12.7. Awesome, right? The NFL draft on Fox, night one, Thursday, had a 7 TV rating. A 7.
Right.
The NFL Pro Bowl routinely outdraws NBA playoffs and World Series games.
By the way,
the NFL is fine.
By the way,
Fox spent what on the Thursday night package?
$660 million a year.
Okay.
By the way, Fox, the draft coverage on Fox, nobody even, like, draft historically has been an ESPN event. So the Fox thing was a simulcast with the NFL network. So you're splitting the ratings because part of the people are the NFL network, part of the people are on Fox that are watching that. I guarantee you the ESPN rating for the draft night one was ginormous. Like, you only can get the NBA championship on ABC. You only get that. There is multiple channels. So you're splitting those ratings between the NFL network, between Fox, and between ESPN, and you're still drawing a 7. So if the NFL draft was only on ABC, that was it, you think it would have outrated the NBA Finals Game 3? Yes, it would have. For guys that you've never heard of. Honestly, how many people, when you get to the draft, how many people have heard of any of these players save the quarterbacks? Seriously, you know the quarterback, you know 4 quarterbacks, right? Maybe 5, and maybe one or two, maybe the Bradley Chubb and you know, one or two other guys that were drafted. Tops. And most people only know, you know, most people rolling in the draft only knew the name Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. And had it been on one station, had it been on ABC, like the NBA Finals are on ABC, and that's the only place you've gone to it, I guarantee you, it would have drawn better than a 12. You split it between three networks.
What was it? 37 of the top 50 programs in 2017?
NFL games?
NFL games?
Yeah.
It's a behemoth. It's a juggernaut. It's not going anywhere.
But it's not without its issues.
Oh, no. I'm not saying it's perfect, but this notion, this myth that's out there, that somehow people are being turned off to the NFL. Yeah, some are.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what. There is not a more, I guess, red, white, and blue presented sport than NASCAR. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the epitome of
America.
Right?
Right.
Tanking. Absolutely tanking. Everyone there standing for the anthem. Flags are waving all over the place. And their ratings are tanking.
Why are their ratings tanking? No stars? Nobody knows names?
Well, I mean, Dale Earnhardt, no Jr. Jeff Gordon.
No Jeff Gordon.
Just not enough boogity, boogity, boogity.
No. You know what they need?
They need more boogity, boogity, boogity.
They need that. There's one thing they... They need Ricky Bobby. If they had Ricky Bobby...
I think it's funny how you got people who are like, oh, the NFL's in trouble. Let me tell you, the NFL is the absolute green ring of envy of every other sport out there. They are just so envious of the NFL, especially an NFL that, by the way, continually shoots themselves in the foot with everything. Everything.
All right.
I mean, anthem policies, rule changes, instant replay. They continually shoot themselves in the foot.
They can't help themselves.
And they're impervious.
Right. And then they reward themselves by giving bonuses to their commissioner. Go, man, we're really smart. No, you're Teflon. It's not that you're smart.
No.
I do believe, though.
I guarantee you there are, like, commissioners and stuff in other sports. Like, you know, poor Gary Bettman in the NHL is just like, oh, my God.
Right.
I mean, if we did half the things wrong that the NFL does, our sport would be sunk.
Right. Isn't it amazing?
And they just keep skating.
Like,
literally.
Like, I always consistently hear, and I like him a lot, the head coach of the Warriors, Steve Kerr. I hear Steve Kerr taking shots at the NFL and stuff. You know, he's kind of a sniper that way.
Yeah, he is. I like him, but yeah.
I do too. No, I really like Steve Kerr, but he constantly goes out of his way, you know, with anthem policy and politics and stuff. And he's a real political guy, you know, so he fires arrows at the NFL. Oh, really? Well, what's your excuse for your ratings being down? Because the playoff ratings were really good for the NFL. What's your excuse for the ratings of the NBA to be down a little bit and the game three to be down? Because you guys all stood for the anthem. You know, what's the story there?
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Steve Kerr.
I do too.
It's just the two teams, the matchups, the familiarity, you know, maybe it's a bunch of LeBron lovers that can't watch the fact that the rest of the team stinks and LeBron's moping around in TV timeouts like, I can't believe I got to carry these losers.
Another, is it just me? Is it just me or is Philip Lindsay? Okay, now this I love this. This is what I love about spring football. Optimism, right? Mm-hmm. I think Philip Lindsay is very similar to Christian McCaffrey. Do you think he could play a similar role as McCaffrey in Carolina? One guy was, what, the eighth overall pick in the draft, and one was undrafted. And yet, Is it that big of a reach to say that? I don't think it is. Not if you haven't been paying. If you've been paying attention to the NFL of the last 5 to 7 years, the role of the little man,
right?
The role of the little man continues to grow and grow.
The role, the ability to match up, the ability, you know, to stick a defense in a quandary, the ability to come out in a, call it a two-back formation with a guy like Philip Lindsay and a guy like, call it Booker, to where you have the threat of, you know, heavy run or Philip Lindsay and Ampipe, to where you have the threat of run, but you really use that threat to dictate to a defense, and then all you try to do is match up that running back on some poor sap linebacker that has no chance of covering him. Like, that's the game. And how quick you get that ball out to the running back and in space and all that kind of stuff, whether it's a swing pass or whether you motion him out of the backfield, you run a, you know, a flat route or you run a wheel, you know, a flat and then out and up. And, you know, and all these things that they're trying to do that are quick throws for the quarterback, quick decisions and quick, you know, just matchup issues for linebackers or safety. So that's really become the game. And yeah, you seem to have one of those. If you have one, it's a really good weapon to have.
Which is why when you look at the Broncos' offensive ineptitude over the last few years, it is so stunning when you consider the elements that they have not had that you see every single Sunday in the NFL. Think about it. No third wide receiver. No slot guy to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
No difference-making pass-catching tight end.
Right.
And no back that is utilized in that jack-of-all-trades type role that we see all the time. Think about it. So the stuff that if you're a football fan that you see every single week, the Broncos lack three of those valuable components.
Right.
No slot, no pass-catching tight end, no back out of the backfield.
Yeah,
think about that.
Right. It's the antithesis of the way the New England Patriots have been built, isn't it?
Them, Atlanta.
Right.
Philly. Any team that's had Danny Woodhead over the years.
Right. You know, you're absolutely right. It really is. You think about all these teams. Even go to Kansas City. You know, with the guy, the threat out of the backfield to catch the ball, the tight end, the Tyreek Hill guy, motion guy across the middle, slot guy. Arizona Cardinals. Think about the way they were built. You got Larry Fitzgerald. You've got a bunch of little receivers that can flat out run. You've got a slot guy. Really haven't had the real they tried with Jermaine Gresham, but they really haven't had a great matchup tight end.
What will the return of a healthy David Johnson mean for Atlanta?
Oh my gosh. Huge.
Right?
Huge. And I like this this tight end kid they converted out of wide receiver. This his name is Seals something or other. Ricky Lee. Chucky's in love. Chucky's in love. Remember that song?
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Not bad. Not as good as your Gordon Lightfoot earlier this week.
Well, I was leaning back. I was in a relaxed
You channeled
mode.
Your Gordon Lightfoot earlier, and it Gordon just set Lightfoot. Me into, like, you know.
Yes.
Squeals. Squeals of laughter.
Right. Ricky Lee Jones or Ricky Seals Jones or Seals Ricky Jones. Something like
Seals
that.
And Croft.
Seals and Croft. They're another good band.
There you go.
Gosh. The 70s were awesome. You think about the 70s and some of the just the great, just like, you know what I heard the other day? America. Remember that band, America?
Yeah, yeah. I swear, sometimes I'll hear a song from the 70s and you can't help but like flash back to your childhood.
Yeah.
And I'll have this image of me in the back seat of my family's car with both of my parents smoking cigarettes and literally my like face like up near the top of the window,
right,
just trying to grasp a little bit of air, you know, as my parents are smoking away. And I don't know, there's some 70s song like, you know, Paul McCartney and Wings or something.
Right. Yes. Jet. Jet. Right?
And I'm like, open the window.
I can't breathe in here. Yeah.
I don't care if it's 10 degrees out. Open the damn window.
You know, speaking of America, just on a side note, on a tangent, do you know that they grew up in, outside of the United States in like an embassy? Like they were all like embassy kids and they formed their band and called it America while they were outside the country. I think they were in Great Britain.
Really?
Yeah. And formed their band, something of that nature. You know, I may be embellishing that story a little bit, but that's close.
But back to what we were talking
she
about.
She came calling wild.
Wind blew down from the town.
It's Friday. It's Friday, and Armin is on vacation. So he's not here. So we can do whatever we want.
Oh, my goodness. I am.
Wind blew down from the town.
But I am absolutely powerless when you... when you play your Gordon Lightfoot impression. Oh, focus. Focus. All right, here we go. Don't do that, Ben.
When the sun goes down. And dun, 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 dun. When oh. blue down. From down.
But Lord, if you're looking at reasons why the Broncos offense can be better. When you think about the fact that, look, just give me one or two of those three crucial elements of NFL offenses today that they haven't had. I don't even need all three. Just tell me that this year, for the first time in several years, you're going to give me and give me a combination of two out of any three. You're going to give me the pass-catching tight end mm-hmm. and a reliable slot receiver. Or right. you're going to give me the pass-catching tight end and a real difference maker out of the backfield. Or you're going to give me the difference out of the backfield and the slot receiver. Mark, do you realize how much different this offense will just look? Never mind the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Just how different it will look if you just add two of those three components. I mean, there are teams around the NFL that have all three.
Right. If you just.
And they've got none.
Yeah. If you literally, if you have, just give me a tight end that is just a nightmare from a matchup standpoint, that can just tie up one safety in the middle of the field, somebody that you have to bracket, you know, in and out, up and down, like a guy that you have to have, a linebacker that's got to give up some of his run responsibility to spread a little bit wider when that guy's in the slot or that guy's, you know, just split a bit, that has to get a hand on, you know, the whole guy's got to slow him down. You can't let him get right up on top of the safety, but the safety is just locked in. Even when you're in zone, the safety's kind of got like one eye down, and then you can, you know, you skate a receiver behind him, whatever. But you're just trying to run, like even if you're just trying to get to the receiver and you're running, you know, a smash concept where you're just trying to get the eyes of the safety, like you're trying to get up on that guy as fast as you can to make him sit so you can throw something behind him. Like those things to me, that would make a huge, both in the run game, like if that tight end is split, and that linebacker is like, I got to get underneath him, or I got to get a hand on him, or I've got to widen him out to my safety. You know, I've got to disrupt him, and I'm getting depth, and you're running, you know, some nickel runs in that vicinity. You block him without touching him.
Isn't that why the whole idea of, well, you better be able to run the football, it's just so cliche to me. I mean, it's just so cliche. Well, you better be able to run the football. Really? I mean, today's NFL, is it really what that comes down to? Or we've identified in the course of the last 20 minutes of conversation three crucial elements of today's NFL passing game that the Broncos have not utilized. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me that it's important that they be able to run the football?
Well,
no, it's not.
Sure. Well,
Wait a minute, I would disagree with you. I would argue that as long as you can do those other things, then you'll be able to run the football all you want.
See, this is where you're wrong. This is where I finally trapped you into the fan.
Trapped me into the fan?
Like you're a fan.
Oh, okay.
Okay. This is.
Well, that's what I am.
Right. But this is where I got you. Like where you're wrong. And now I'm going to educate you. I'm going to slap some edumacation on you.
Okay, good.
Okay, so here's the
edumacation. Because I'm going to just totally beat you back.
Okay, this is where the edumacation comes down. Running the ball is not about running between the 20s and, you know, and you know, all the things that people think about running the ball. Running the ball, to me, is about dictated situations. When you know we have to run it, and we know we have to run it, and you can still convert. Running the ball, to me, is going into the end zone, in the red zone, and being able to run it with efficiency, because it gets so squeezed down there that what I just talked about in the passing game, how that linebacker has to make sure he widens and how he has to carry the tight end to the safety and now it opens up running lanes. Guess what? Those things no longer apply down there because you've got you can't run over the top of people. Like that safety can play from high to low because you're not going to sneak the receiver behind him anymore because you just don't have any field to operate in. That's why the running game, and that's where the running game to me is really important. And people just think of it as, oh, between the 20s, you average 6 yards. I don't care about that stuff. I don't care about popping a draw for 30 yards. I care about getting down, and this is why physical teams win football games, even in the passing game. I care about getting down into the red zone and saying, we're going to cram this down your throat. That's where things in the red zone open up. That's the difference between kicking field goals and scoring touchdowns. And when you score touchdowns, you win. When you kick field goals, you lose.
Oh, Mark. Mark stuck in the 90s, Mark. So this past year, the Broncos were 12th in the NFL in rushing yards, 13th in the NFL in yards per carry, and 8th in the NFL in rushing attempts.
Give me their red zone.
And they were 5-11. My argument is that you give me a legitimate third wide receiver slot guy, pass catching tight end, and a legitimate weapon coming out of the backfield in your passing game. Give me two of those three, and their rushing stats can drop all the way into the low teens, early 20s, and this offense will be dramatically better.
Because of why?
Not because of what they're doing running the football, what they're doing throwing the football.
Okay.
I got you.
No, you don't.
No, I can tell. You're a little bit. There's that
because I'm like, I don't want to be disrespectful to my partner and go, oh, my Lord. All those things are true. They will be better. But to be great in the red zone, to score touchdowns, would you agree that this offense has struggled in the red zone over the years? They've struggled in the red zone over the years because
they don't have a pass catching tight end, and they don't have Julius Thomas in his prime and Wes Welker. They were a red zone machine back then because of those kind of guys, not because they were running the football in.
Wow. You just really irritate me.
Hashtag winning.
Hashtag I'm angry.
Winning's tall.
Yeah, I am angry.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you a chance. You're on the ropes.
I'm not
right
on
now.
The ropes. I'm just saying that there's a complimentary aspect to it. And also, I'm going to finish with this, okay?
Well,
I'm going to tease it. Okay, but that's what I'm going to finish with. Okay. I'm going to finish with it. All that remains are the faces and names of the wives and the sons and the daughters. Wind blew down, home and down.
Oh, you big lug, all is forgiven. All right. Oh, Fridays. God bless Fridays.
Lightfoot, I love you, man.
Oh, my
goodness.
I
love you, Gordon Lightfoot.
Okay, all right, I'm going to give you 5 minutes here to try to come off the ropes and have a suitable retort. That's next. All right, you've had about 4 or 5 minutes to kind of gather your thoughts after I just kind of took you behind the woodshed with this whole got to be able to run the football, importance of the running game, blah, 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 blah. And now that I've debunked that myth.
You have not debunked that myth. You didn't do anything to debunk that myth.
So wait a minute. If everybody listening can agree that over the last 3+ years, the Broncos have lacked, in whatever order you want to put them in, pass-catching tight end, slot receiver, and a pass-catching threat out of the backfield. They've lacked all three.
Okay.
All three components that the best offenses in the league have all three of. They have none of the three. You're telling me that it's more important that they establish a run-first identity this year than actually go out and fill those holes? And that if they fill those holes, won't that have far more to do with dramatically improving the offense than being able to run the football?
Not dramatically, but dramatically, yes. That would help.
Did I say dramatically?
Yeah, you said dramatically.
No, I said dramatically.
No, you said, can I rewind that? Listen to the dramatically. Oh.
Do you have it?
Yeah, he doesn't really have it. He has to get it.
Well, until I hear it.
All right, can you see if you can find that?
I didn't say dramatically. I said dramatically fast.
No, he said dramatically.
I didn't say dramatically.
Just listen to it. Then.
All right, whatever. Won't that have far more to do with dramatically improving? Oh, I did say dramatically.
You automatically lose the argument.
No. Okay, won't that have far more to do with dramatically improving? Dramatically.
Dramatically.
I thought it was just you that made up words.
No.
I just created a word.
You dramatically changed.
Oh, my God.
You dramatically changed the course of this conversation.
I'm really, actually, this makes my week. I created a word.
Yeah.
Dramatically.
I will dramatically debunk your theory right now.
I wonder, actually.
You're going to look up dramatically?
Just to see if it's a word.
Dramatically is not dramatically. I can't think of anything that I could.
Dramatically.
Dramatically. Did you find it?
No.
Shocker. Shocking development, people. Dramatically turns out not to be a word.
Dramatically
Listen. You're 100% right. All those things would help. You know, you went back to the 2013 or with Peyton Manning and were like, oh, well, they were great in the red zone. You know, when they had Julian Edelman and they had Julius Thomas and Wes Welker. And so, you know, this team's going to be dramatically. But they had Peyton Manning. Okay, they had the greatest quarterback of his time. Red zone offense would be dramatically better if they knew how to run the ball in pressure situations. How much better would this offense have been over the last 2 years if they could convert a third down and one running the ball when they tried to convert third down and ones running the ball? How many times did we see this team not be able to convert? That's where running the ball, to me, is more about your attitude, your physicality, your ability to dictate in those situations. That's what needs to dramatically improve. It will a tight end and a slot receiver, will that help? Absolutely, because you can dictate formationally to a team and you can get a soft spot to run into. So that will, there's no question that that will help. But you, in my mind, you've got to be able in situations to dictate. Now, if you've got Tom Brady and Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski and you got, you know, who's one of their running backs?
Like Deion Lewis.
Yeah,
Deion
Lewis.
Like, yeah.
Okay. Do we have to line up and physically beat you down? No. But you're talking about Tom Brady. Case Keenum is not Tom Brady. No tight end we have is going to be Gronk. No slot receiver we're going to have is automatically going to be Julian Edelman.
Well, you know, I'm not saying you have to have those guys. I'm saying, but you can have some some close facsimile to it. All right, so to your point, and I know, I agree, I'm with every other Bronco fan out there, it's been so frustrating to see them fail on third and one. But let's say, okay, all right, you can, it's third and one at the other guy's 40. And they convert it. Great. It's first and 10 now from the 38. What are you now going to do that ensures that you finish off that drive with a touchdown right, as opposed to having to settle for a field goal attempt? And again, it's my argument that, all right, you convert that third and one. Great. The only reason, the only way you're going to consistently end up in the end zone is if you have the pass catching tight end, the difference maker in the slot, or the difference maker coming out of the backfield.
I agree with you. All those things are important, and all those things will help the running game, but the running game will also help the quarterback and help those guys consistently get open. So there is a complementary aspect to this that will certainly add to the offense. And let's face it, where we've been offensively the last couple of years, we need all those things to happen. We need all those things to happen just to take some pressure off this offensive line. The other thing is, when you can consistently run the ball like that, here's I guess maybe the biggest factor that we haven't even talked about. The amount of pressure it takes off your line when it comes to pass protection is enormous. The amount of pressure it will take off. What have we said? The one thing about the youth at the running back position. What have we said? The hardest thing. I've said it several times today. Troy Rank came on and said it. What did he talk about? Talked about pass protection, right? You run the ball. It's amazing how many less opportunities those guys will have to, you know, have to step up to the plate in pass protection. So, again, this is the complementary nature of football that we as fantasy football freakout fans tend to forget. And it's exactly one of the biggest downfalls of this offense after the first two games of last season that happened. So I'm not saying it's the end all be all, and I know the league has changed to throw it 60% of the time. But understanding how to run the ball, especially in critical situations, that will win you games if you can do it.
Coming up, Mark shares his text conversation with Rockies manager Bud Black. What did Mark try to convince Bud to do? And was he successful? Find out coming up next. All right, so do share. You texted back and forth with Rocky skipper Bud Black. Was it yesterday?
I think 2 days
Tuesday,
ago.
Tuesday, 2 days ago?
Yeah, 2 days ago. Something like that.
All right, what can you share?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, Bud Black is, he's a great guy. He's a gracious guy, former pitcher. When my son came up, he was managing the Padres. And, you know, my son had some pretty decent success against the Padres his rookie year when he was with Arizona. He struck out the side. In one outing, he struck the side in 11 pitches. In another outing, he struck out the side in 15 pitches. And so Bud always liked Daniel and has always kind of kept he's kept tabs on him and kept in contact. And you just talk about, you know, guys that are classy, guys that are in the midst or embroiled in their own stuff, which he is, right, in the rocky season and the job that it takes to manage that and the time that it takes. And he texted me and just said, "Hey man, congrats on Daniel. It's great news. Tell him, you know, congratulations. I'm keeping up with him," which was really cool. So we just went back and forth saying, "Hey man, thanks. I appreciate you reaching out," type of thing. Right. Which awesome that Bud would take the time just to even acknowledge it. Right. Really cool. Really cool. And so then I was just like, "Hey, you know, we're kind of talking baseball a little bit," and I was like, "The bullpen, you know, my goodness." And he's like,
"Couldn't help yourself, could you?"
No, I'm like, I'm a fan, like, mm-hmm. I'm cheering you, but man, we gotta rectify it. And he basically came back to me and said, I've got great faith, and we're gonna turn this thing around, and these guys will find their kind of spots, you know. And and so I was just joking with him. I go, "You know what? I always tell Daniel my football perspective, and it's become a big joke with us just to relax him, because he always tells me, you know, you have no idea what you're talking about, so shut up," like, type of thing, you know, father-son stuff. And I go, I always tell Daniel, no matter what, I'm like, "Hey, listen, make sure tonight, if you get in, stay low, keep your knees bent, and throw strikes. And so it's just become this big, stupid joke between us. So I tell Bud, I said, hey, make sure you tell your relievers that I told them to stay low, keep your knees bent, and throw strikes. And he wrote me back just deadpan. He goes, hey, that's great advice. And that was
I'll pass that along.
Yeah, I'll pass it along. That's great advice.
Slareth, what a fan.
So it was just funny, you know? It was just a funny exchange.
But it was, okay, all kidding aside, there is one, I think, sort of telling comment there. And that it's his belief that patience is the key here. You know, for all right. of us who are football fans, mm-hmm. and it's week to week, you know, every fire is a potential inferno type thing.
Right.
His point is, we're 62 games into 162.
Right.
We got 100 games left. The last thing I can do is overreact with this bullpen. All right, that's the baseball way of thinking. But you can understand why, for a lot of people, it's like, I don't want to wait. What are you waiting for?
Right.
Can you afford to wait? I mean, is he falling into the trap of age-old baseball groupthink?
I don't know that. I think there's part of it that, like, you're trying to convince yourself, like, nothing to see here. It's going to be fine. I think the bigger thing is when a guy loses confidence, Mike. So you're coaching a little league team, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're coaching your son. And let's say your son scuffles at the dish and he's really upset with himself and it's not going very well. It's incumbent upon you as his father at some time to have a legitimate, serious conversation with him, but at the same time, try to get his confidence back. Like, I think one of the best things you can do as a parent, okay? One of the best things I can do as a parent is to tell my kid, be honest with him, but say, but listen, man, I believe in you. Like, there's something incredibly special about having somebody believe in you, especially when you've lost confidence in yourself. And to pull up alongside a kid and put your arm around him and say, man, I believe in you. And
okay, listen, Dr. Spock.
Major League Baseball
sounds great.
Is no different.
I mean, this is an 11-year-old whose only hope is that I'll get him an ice cream on the way home. We're talking about grown men who are getting paid millions of dollars.
Right. Well, see, but
and you
that's
just want me
problem.
To put an arm around them? And
that's your problem.
Treat them like they're 11?
You think millions of dollars takes away your emotional response as a human. And it doesn't. And sometimes you need somebody when you're scuffling and things aren't going well to come alongside you and say, I still believe in you. I have faith that you'll rectify this. Now, there comes a time, there's going to be a delineating line. And, you know, for me as a football guy, we've already stepped over it. But baseball people have a little bit more patience than that, which is probably why I'll never be a baseball coach. I probably will never be a football coach because I tend to, you know, panic. That's just my nature. And so I think there is a lot of this where Bud probably in the inside doesn't have a lot of faith. But he can't let that permeate his outer shell. Like he has got to exude confidence and to give guys that don't have confidence right now some confidence in their ability.
What is wrong with a kick in the butt, though?
Nothing.
What is wrong with just saying you're a proven big leaguer, you've done this before, get out of your own head and go out and get the job done.
Right.
Or else. My goodness. I mean, everybody else in every other walk of life faces that kind of pressure. Why right. is this group think in baseball that we have to walk on eggshells around these guys to protect their fragile psyches?
What's the group think in fandom where once you get paid some money, you're no longer a human? Like, why do you think because you made $1 million that you're no longer susceptible to human nature?
Of course you are, but there's also
why?
But are you telling me that every time you face adversity, the go-to response is, well, let's you know, try to coax and baby him through it? Or
no.
I mean, at some point, don't you just have to buck up?
Yeah, at some point you do.
Well, then buck up, bullpen.
And I think there comes a time where you go through the chew out process to the rebuilding process to the arm around the shoulder process.
So when do we get to the chew out process?
I think
because right now we're in put an arm around him. And
well, I think the
chew out is going to be okay.
I think there's been the chew out process. Now I think you're into the, hey, let's put an arm around the guy because he hasn't responded to the chew out process.
You think they've chewed out Brian Shaw?
Oh, do I think he's had a pitcher on pitcher conversation with Brian Shaw? Yes. Sure.
That's been direct?
Absolutely.
And colorful?
Sure.
Okay.
And, you know, and then there comes the, you know, arm around you, I believe in you. And then eventually what ends up happening is, I mean, you can already see it where you're not getting as many opportunities, you know. When you started the season, Ottavino wasn't the eighth inning guy. Do you know who started as the eighth inning guy? Do you remember? It was Shaw. So they've already let you know that, you know, we got an issue. And, you know, and eventually it's going to get to the point where we're not going to put you in leverage situations. We're only putting you in when 11 run. If we're up by 11 or we're down by 11, that's when you get to play. You know? You're a right fielder on Mike's little league team that gets two innings.
Just got a text from DeHuff.
Is he at the zoo?
Who's perpetually on vacation.
Is he at the zoo?
I'm telling you. This guy. Anyway, he's been off this week. Yeah. Apparently he's listening. He just sent me a text. I just want to say I believe in both of you.
You lift me up.
Oh, I believe you will end this week on a high note. And stop sucking. Now go get them, Tigers. Did you get that? Yeah, you got it too.
Yeah.
Sarcasm.
Do you know how he put Tigers there?
Sarcasm.
You know why?
Sarcasm.
Because he's at the zoo?
Yeah, he's at the zoo.
He's inspired by looking at Tigers?
Right, he just walked by the Tiger pen.
Meow.
Oh, the huff. I have never seen a dude spend so much time at the zoo.
I know. Listen, if anybody from the Denver Zoo is listening, this guy deserves a lifetime pass. Because there is not a bigger proponent of your zoo than Scott DeHuff. He's always at the zoo.
What would the voice of Zookeeper DeHuff be? Like, you know, what voice would come out of Zookeeper DeHuff?
We'll have to work on that. He's listening. He's working on it right now.
Right.
Hey, very quickly. Mm-hmm. You told me once that your son Daniel pitched for Jim Leland.
Oh, yeah.
Old school as they come, right?
Yeah.
What did you tell me the story about when he walked out to the mound one time?
Oh, he did it all the time. All the time. You want to talk about not giving your guys confidence? Hey, go get him. You walk a guy, I'm sending you down to AAA. All the time. You walk anybody, I'll send you to AAA tonight.
And how did your son respond?
He spent a few different stints going down to AAA.
But it didn't break him, did it?
No, he's a tough little nut.
Okay.
Now. He's a tough little nut.
All right, then.
But listen, Jim Leland couldn't do anything that I didn't do 10 times as bad. Sometimes I was a bad father, Mike. But Daniel will be the first guy to come on here and tell you that me being tough on him as a kid, as an athlete,
mm-hmm.
is one of the deciding factors that's helped him
grind
through.
All right, then. So, and that was when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are major leaguers, blessed with thunderbolts for arms, reaching the highest level of maybe the most difficult sport there is to play.
Yeah.
Getting paid millions of dollars. I don't think they need to be coddled.
Did you say cobbled?
Coddled.
I thought he said cobbled.
No, I did not say cobbled. I said coddled.
Are you sure?
Maybe DeHuff can get his best, like, Siegfried and Roy voice or something mm-hmm. going, you know, there, something like that. Very, very Barnum and Bailey-ish type thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? All right, we are done.
Do a musical.
I don't think they need to be coddled. Say coddled. Didn't say cobbled. Now, I did screw up earlier, for those who missed it. I was trying to say dramatically. Dramatically. I said dramatically.
Dramatically.
I created dramatically a word. Dramatically improved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That might become my new thing.
Dramatically?
Dramatically. I'm just going to use it.
It's a great word.
Boy, this Broncos offense, dramatically improved.
Right. Or just throw it out there when it doesn't even make sense. Like, it does make sense because it's not a word, but even like, hey, I got to dramatically get up the road.
What? Yeah. But everyone out there will get it.
Right.
Okay, they've got their bubbles ready to go.
Yes, they do.
Pritch and Cecil coming your way next.